And welcome back to Cinema Gems. And as always, I'm your host, the Admirable Admiral. And as always, we are in a video store somewhere in your hometown. So come find us. Yes, video stores still exist, guys. And of course, as always, the Honorable Tesla and the fantastic Miss Frida are here in the video store in the Central Florida location. And as the fantastic Miss Frida is giving me the go-ahead with her paws, she is holding up two paws, so saying we're a go to enter the radio transmission to talk to the Butt Maestro. How's it going, buddy?
Hi, Admiral. Good to be back, like every week. And of course, this is, as always, my favorite thing to do every week. Watch a weird movie and talk about it with you. But if y'all don't know what I'm talking about, hi, welcome back to Cinema Gems. We are another show on the internet where a bunch of opinionated nerds talk about the things we love. And like I said, that changes from week to week. Sometimes we'll roast something that's just so weird that we can't comprehend it. I think this might be one of those weeks, but I'm not sure. Admiral, what are we doing this week?
David Lynch's Dune! David Lynch's Dune! David Lynch's Dune! D-U-N-E! Dune by David Lynch!
I have to tell the listeners, I have to give the listeners a little bit of context behind this, because a little less than an hour ago, when the Admiral called me to do our usual kind of like pre-show setup and checklist, he started the phone call by singing that, an 80s theme song that does not exist. Toto wrote music for this movie, and that's not it. And I'm not going to say that what the Admiral made was better than the music Toto made for this movie, but I do also like it.
Thank you.
And I want to make it happen.
Thank you.
I can see the grainy VHS footage. Oh. And the cheesy looking title cards. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep. So, people, we're doing it. We're reviewing David Lynch's Dune.
We're doing the weird one. And look, just for some added context, both the Admiral and I believe by now, have seen Dune Part 2, Denis Villeneuve's Dune Part 2 in the theaters. Correct, Admiral?
Yeah, I saw it a couple weeks ago. I think so.
And I did as well. And I'll be honest, if it's the only movie I see in the theater this year, I'm okay with that. I am. I want to go to more movies in the theater, but dang, they're expensive.
Yep. Ooh. Yep. They are.
So I think having that point of reference of how Denis Villeneuve interpreted Frank Herbert's work, we can go into this and see how David Lynch interpreted Denis Villeneuve's book. And what you're seeing here, a lot of people who, you know, there are tons of adaptations of pre-written works, whether it be books or video games or what have you. And this is one of those situations where you have two different cases of two very different visionaries, both with the reference material on set, constantly referencing that material, and the result being two completely different things, right? These are two very different adaptations of a great artistic work by two different artists. So Denis Villeneuve's interpretation takes all of the narration and kind of inner dialogue that Frank Herbert narrates throughout the book and puts that in visual language for us, the audience, to extrapolate from. David Lynch does not do that.
So basically, it's like...
Wouldn't you agree, Admiral?
It's okay, so basically, I guess it would say, do you want lobster or oysters? I know it's this, they're both shellfish, but still, one's really weird and one's good. So, it's...
Right, one's really weird and the other is oyster.
Exactly. Or the opposite, whatever you prefer. I was going to leave it open-ended for the listener to pick out, but sure, if you want to go ahead and say that...
Oh, no, give me some Trollgrilled oyster over any kind of lobster any day.
Oh, see, that's where we differ. That's where we differ, I'm sorry. Sorry. It must be...
Get in the comments.
It must be my potential northerner coming out. Sorry.
Help us settle this debate at cinemagems15@gmail.com. Tell us which one of us is right.
It's whatever. I'm not saying that you're wrong or I'm right.
And I'm trying to get audience engagement going, Admiral.
Oh, I thought you were like getting ready. I was like, man, look, whatever you want, man. It's whatever, man. It's whatever.
But David Lynch takes a very literal approach to the narrative devices of what Frank Herbert does. Because like I said, Frank Herbert in the novel has a lot of inner dialogue of these characters. You have a lot of characters throughout this whole story that don't say a whole lot out loud, but they think a whole lot. And a lot of times what they think does not match what they say. Because as you can see from like the Bene Gesserit and all of these imperial royal types, they're always lying. The David Lynch version does a phenomenal job of beating you over the head with that constantly, of trust no one because their thoughts do not match their actions.
No, I agree with you. Before we go any further at But My Show, I did want to get that listener opinion out of the way that I told you about previously.
Go for it.
I just want to get this out before I forget it. I apologize. To stop
what you got.
So one of our listeners, Connor Darko, he's a huge David Lynch fanatic. So I basically, I was like, would you like to give us a little blurb? I'll read it out. You know, let me know what you think about David Lynch's Dune. And he responds with this. You ready?
Go for it.
Why fall asleep while watching the shiny new Dunes when you can be wide awake becoming beautiful 80s Lynch cheese? Agent Cooper would want it that way. That's what Connor Darko said.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't disagree. This is a big, bombastic, it's definitely a different vibe.
Yeah.
And he's absolutely right. I don't disagree. Because of how Denis Villeneuve kind of did things in this newest one and really left a lot of the movie up to visual audience interpretation, I can see how if you're not ready for that marathon, it could be a little bit boring. And I understand there's a lot of kind of homework involved in like giving additional context, whereas the David Lynch's Dune doesn't make you do any of that homework. It spells it all out very blatantly by letting the audience hear the inner thoughts of every character. Almost every character.
So should we preface that we both watched this movie in two sittings?
Yes.
I cut it off.
I watched it within the same day, but one kind of in the morning and one later in the afternoon.
Okay. So I watched mine. I watched the first half. Till about where Deneve stopped his movie to start his other one. I stopped about there and I waited 3 days, one for each year in between Dune movies that we had to wait. So I waited 3 days and then I finished it. And yeah, it's an interesting ride. Not a bad ride, an interesting ride.
It's a beast of a movie. Yeah. Not denying that. It is absolutely a beast of a movie. It is a lot to take in because he's throwing a lot of information at you. He's also way, way, way dramatizing it. He makes it more like a space opera akin to kind of what Star Wars would eventually do, with everything having a monumental amount of significance.
Well, technically, this came out after Star Wars.
Right, I'm saying like what the later Star Wars would do. Like
Empire and all. Yeah, speaking of Star Wars, a year prior to this being made, David Lynch was asked by George Lucas to come and direct Return of the Jedi.
That would have been interesting.
Yeah. And Connor Darko can expand a little bit more on it. But what I know personally is it's not my thing. And then he goes and does Dune. I'm like, hey, you know.
That's
funny. Oh, by the way, did you like that this is the theatrical debut of Kyle MacLachlan?
I figured as much. Because what, like, what's he in Twin Peaks before or after this?
Oh, after this. Twin Peaks was in the late 80s, early 90s.
Because I'll be honest, most of what I know Kyle MacLachlan from are Twin Peaks, this, and his bit.
How I Met Your Mother?
Yep, thank you. As yep. as the captain and boats, boats, boats.
Yep. Oh, and also, you know the when they started riding the worms with the tension hooks?
Yes.
You know those are made out of condoms, that material?
Okay, that's really funny.
Yeah. By the way, people, this is one of those episodes where it's just like, hey, did you know this scene? This. I thought this about this scene. I mean, that's how we're kind of going to go with these big epics.
We're going to try to give you the kind of points of reference of like how certain details differ and what details to look for when you're kind of examining this movie under a little bit of a microscope. But if you want to watch the movie, watch the movie. We already told you there's no shame in breaking this up into chunks. That's what we do most of the time with these movies, especially if it's a lot to take in, because we're trying to take some kind of notes. We're trying to actually pay attention to detail and pay attention to the things that stand out for us, both narratively and aesthetically. One of those things I want to talk about that stands out narratively and aesthetically to me is there is David Lynch's interpretation of the Weirding Way. Now, they all of the basic things that you saw in Denis Villeneuve's version that were established in the Frank Herbert novel are all in this movie. All the characters are there. The spice melange is there. The planet Arrakis, where all the spice is manufactured, is there. The Harkonnens and the Emperor, it's all there in this version. The thing I don't love, and I'll be honest, it's really something in Denis Villeneuve's version that I like a lot more. The Weirding Way kind of being more of a martial art and more like a Taoism mentality and mental state and state of mental discipline all the time. It's what we saw in Denis Villeneuve's version, right?
Correct.
In this, it's a box you speak into and it goes boom. It's a weirding box that knocks out shields that makes psychic blasts. Which... And I thought that was really cool when I was 10.
Okay, I was going to ask you, that's not in the book, right?
Correct. I don't think that interpretation of the Weirding Way, I don't think there are any weirding modules described in the books. And please correct me if I'm wrong. You know how to reach us at cinemagems15@gmail.com.
Speaking of, in this version, the sister grows at an accelerated rate because of the worm water. And
just
gets
like
out.
In Denis Villeneuve's version, right. The difference, as you're about to point out, is in Denis' version, we don't get creepy baby killing the Reverend Mother or the Baron.
Correct. Okay, cool. I just wanted to specify that. That happened in the book, right?
Yes, I believe so. Okay. Aaliyah was pre-born and considered to be an abomination, just like Paul.
Of course.
Well, considered by the Bene Gesserit to be an abomination. Right. Now, whether the Bene Gesserit are calling them that because they're contradictory to the Bene Gesserit's plans, or because the Bene Gesserit do really know something about how being pre-born does not necessarily destine you to do great things, it just destines you to do big things. My whole interpretation of Frank Herbert's how he describes prescience and how Paul can see all of the futures laid out in front of him, my whole thing is he's still human and he still has to make an active human choice of which of those futures to glean from. Does that make sense?
No, I agree with you. I understand and agree with you.
So every version of Frank Herbert's work is and should be a little bit different. They all should be different, look into different parallel universes that Paul is peering into. That's right. That's the weird thing about Frank Herbert's novel, is that it sets up to have infinite interpretations of it. It's built in.
But I guess it's kind of like...
I'm just so much of a nerd that I think that's cool.
No, you're not. It's just, like, art is open to interpretation. So your vision of what your version of Doom will be completely different from what mine is.
Correct.
Mine will probably be a shot-for-shot remake of David Lynch's Dune, but with dogs. Like,
I thought you were going to say Muppet, but you made it better.
I mean...
But for what it's worth, I would also love an all-Muppets version of Dune.
I was going to say, why not both? Por qué no los dos?
With Kermit the Frog as Paul Atreides.
Oh, and wait.
I am Paul Muad'Dib Atreides, Duke of Arrakis.
Would Miss Piggy be the Emperor's daughter?
Yeah, no, that was my next question. Is Miss Piggy Chani, or is she Princess Urulon?
I think she would be the princess. Yeah. You know what?
Princess Urulon.
We don't need to go down this rabbit hole, because this could be a whole episode. Listeners, if you want us to pick ideas of movies and go, oh, hey, this is Muppet themed, this is what would Muppet cast, let us know. We will gladly do that if you want us to.
Or if you pitch us your Muppet cast for a Dune movie, we will read it on air.
Exactly. I would love to listen.
Absolutely. Please.
I would love. Please. Please let us know. But speaking of Paul, did you know Val Kilmer turned down the role for Paul Atreides?
Honestly, good.
Really? You're like, no.
Respect to Val Kilmer, although not really. Because we've seen how absurdly difficult he's been on so many other sets.
Correct.
I know we've both watched and listened to all the weird behind-the-scenes things about the Island of Dr. Moreau.
Yep. Yeah, that was...
So, it was, Val Kilmer would not have been a fun time to work with on the set of a hard sci-fi movie.
But this was also his earlier career. This is, like, right around Top Secret. Like, it's...
Yeah.
I feel like it would be really good, but, hey, that's my interpretation, not yours. You know what I mean? Also,
Exactly.
Speaking of Paul, Paul Atreides and Fade Rutha were 15 in the book, right? Right.
Just about.
Okay, cool.
It's kind of unclear. They're teenagers.
Kyle MacLachlan.
They're also parallels of each other.
Kyle MacLachlan is in his 20s. And
that makes sense.
And Sting was in his 30s. Like, okay, cool. Like,
I mean, they're perfect if you ignore
right
how old they're supposed to be in the
right,
books.
Right.
They're perfect for the role. Honestly, Sting was a lot of fun.
Oh, Sting was...
You can tell he's just having a lot of fun on the set, being like a maniac.
So is it laid down in law by Frank Herbert that every person who plays Fade Rautha has to be a musician?
Totally unhinged.
Has to be a musician? Because you got Sting, you got Elvis... I mean, what?
Yeah.
Come on.
No, you're right. You're right.
And also,
I don't know if that's a hard, fast rule. It just happens to work out like that. Because I guess only musicians can really channel that unhinged energy.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so that means...
That Fade Rautha exudes.
That means it would be Rolf from the Muppets.
Like, I will say both versions of Fade Rautha, both us, Austin Butler in Denis' version and Sting in David Lynch's version... Both give me the heebie-jeebies. Absolutely.
Yeah.
They both very successfully make me want to stay very far away from them.
Yeah. So would that mean Rolf the dog, it would be in the Muppet casting? Be Rolf the dog.
Oh, God. Why is Rolf in this? No. Actually, wait. You know what?
Would it be Animal?
I think Gonzo has to be Duncan Idaho.
Yeah. Oh, see, no, I was thinking Patrick Stewart's character.
Oh, Gurney?
Yeah.
I was going to say Fozzie is Gurney.
Okay, maybe. I don't know. But look, like I said, we're not doing that, but it's fine. I feel like Animal's more of Fayed anyway.
It's time to harvest the spice. It's time to light the fires.
Oh, and also, you know Max von Snowden, his character?
Yeah.
He only filmed for 2 weeks.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, we got ear flaps, people. I don't know if you heard that, but the Honorable Tesla did give ear flaps for that one.
Thank you, Tesla. Everyone drink Tesla. Water.
And
if this is your first time listening to this show in a while, and we haven't refreshed y'all's memory on this, we did establish a game a long time ago that whenever the dogs did ear flaps, drink water, hydrate. Yep.
And also, apparently, so two things about Patrick Stewart. Well, three things, technically. He was completely miscast. Agree?
Absolutely, I agree.
Do you know why? Because David Lynch
why?
Thought we were getting a different Patrick Stewart than what we got. There was a completely different Patrick Stewart.
Entirely different person?
Yes, a completely different actor.
What?
Yeah, he thought he got the wrong Patrick Stewart that he wanted.
No, my question is, why did the evil judge from Judge Dredd have to be Duke Leto Atreides?
I don't know, man. I don't know.
But you know what I'm talking about, right? Yeah, that's the only other role that Jürgen Prochnow stands out to me as. I remember, I recognized his face, and I was like, what are you? Oh, you're the evil judge that turns on the rest of the megacity.
Well, wait.
In the Stallone Judge Dredd.
Oh, I thought that was Max von Sydow. Or he's in that movie, though.
Max von Sydow is also in this, but I can't find where at on the cast list.
But that's fine. No, and then the other thing about Patrick Stewart is he hated the still suits, but he liked how his body looked in them. Yep. Oh, and the last thing, this one I find hilarious about Patrick Stewart. He didn't know who Sting was. He did not know who Sting was. He's like, oh, hey, are you a solo artist? And he's like, no, I'm in a band called The Police. So for the longest time, Patrick Stewart thought that Sting was in a police band. Yeah, he apparently never heard of Sting. So I'm just like, okay.
He should put on the red light.
Yep, he should. For Roxanne. I guess the other thing, I'm just going to get this out of the way because it's hilarious too. So you know the scene when Sting gets out of the tub or the smoke or whatever? Apparently that was originally supposed to be a nude scene. And Sting was for it. He was like, yep, I'll do it. Let's do it. And they were all they were all ready to go. Right before they started filming, the studio goes, no, no. Put something on him. Oh, put something on him.
Boo.
So literally that...
I wanted to see Sting's bare butt.
So that apparatus was made like right before that scene was shot. That's why it looks so weird.
It's amazing.
Yep.
I did want to mention two things. One, I don't know if you had mentioned yet Grima Wormtongue, Brad Dourif, as the Harkonnen Mentat, Piter DeVries, who had a much, much, much bigger role in this than in the Denis Villeneuve version. He was way more conniving and more of a mustache-twirling, manipulative villain, whereas in the Villeneuve version, he's more of just, like, doing his job and, like, I don't know, being kind of cold about it. But, like, eventually dies. I don't know. I was very happy that Brad Dourif, Piter DeVries, he was excellent in this role and terrifying. And I was very happy when he frickin' died. Frickin', I'm so sorry.
It's okay. What about... Oh, you got it. Let's see. All right, cool. I got that.
Sorry.
24... That is basically Dave Bautista's character, correct?
No. Dave Bautista's character is Raban.
Oh, okay.
Which is Vladimir Harkonnen's one of his nephews. The other one being Fade Rotha.
Right.
Every royal family has a Mentat.
Okay.
Which is a person with a supercomputer for a brain.
Okay. Sorry, people.
Brad Dourif in this plays Piter DeVries, who is the walking AI essentially walking computer brain of the Harkonnens.
Oh, okay.
But his walking computer brain has been twisted and messed with by the Harkonnens.
Okay. All right, cool. Thank you for understanding. I have another question. How did you like Dean Stockwell from Quantum Leap playing Dr. Yue? I thought he was underutilized. I wanted more of him.
I thought he was underutilized as well. I did.
Yep.
It was a little bit of a shame.
Did you know Sir John Hurt was offered that part, but he turned it down?
Oh, he would have been fantastic.
Oh, he would have been amazing in it. He'd have been stupendous.
Absolutely. I think the casting all around for this movie was interesting. It's just a very weird movie because it's a very straightforward, kind of literal, taking the pages literally adaptation of a very weird book.
Also, Rob Lowe was offered the role of Paul Atreides and he turned it down.
I'm kind of glad he turned it down. This might have been a little too weird for Rob Lowe.
Yep. And also, David Lynch has gone on record that this is his financial flop. And he does not like this movie. If he's interviewed, he would prefer not to talk about it. It's one of, he feels, the darker spots of his career. And that's why this is his only adaptation. All of his other stuff is his original work.
Well, look, David Lynch, because we know you have to be listening to this, of course.
Yeah, of course, David Lynch.
We know you're listening to this, so please, please be reassured. Your movie is enjoyable.
100%.
You didn't do yourself a favor when you decided to adapt something so weird, but for having adapted something so weird, you did a phenomenal job with it, especially given all the technology of the time. Do things look a little bit janky compared to how they can look now, 40 years later? Absolutely. But we can also appreciate the relics of the time being what they are, and an interpretation of a very fantastical kind of sci-fi premise. I'm sorry if I haven't already mentioned it.
You're talking about the music?
But Toto's... Yeah, Toto did the music for this movie, and you know what? It really works.
So my only problem...
I'm not going to lie.
My only problem with the music...
That four-note theme that gets so hyped with the choir and the electric guitar going, the... Bum, 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 is so... It's so cool. It works.
I'm sorry. My only problem with the music is that I thought there were going to be lyrics. I'm not upset, but...
Of course not.
But I thought there were going to be lyrics.
It's the same as Daft Punk doing the music for Tron Legacy.
Now I understand.
It's a band with some classical training getting a chance to compose a somewhat classical score, but also use some of their own style, which is exactly what they did. And it's phenomenal.
Okay. What was your favorite?
I don't know. You mentioned I love your the music part in this
with
movie.
The horns?
Absolutely. The final battle. Where they're all riding on top of the worms and that music comes to a big old crescendo. I even looked it up a minute ago on YouTube and the part, that exact moment has the most views.
That most frequently it skyrockets viewed. Up most views.
Yeah, you see a little graph at the bottom of the play scroller. Most frequently viewed.
There were some things made up for this. The Scood, the one he picked, the Squood, that's not the same as the one that Paul says in the new one, correct? And that character was completely made up, I believe. That
I guess.
Line, that line.
Yeah.
Apparently Helena Bonham Carter was going to be the princess.
Interesting. Before she got typecast as a cuckoo bananas crazy person in every movie.
That's what she is typecast as. Also, this was filmed in Mexico. Like they took 3 weeks to like clear out all the sand so they could use it. But yeah, part of it was filmed in Mexico. And It was also filming around the same time as Conan the Destroyer. So Conan the Destroyer and Dune have similar scenes.
Okay, that makes sense now.
Yep. And we're talking about the second.
You're gonna make me.
The second Conan.
You're gonna make me go back and watch a Conan movie, but now I feel like I have to out of curiosity.
It's the second one though, not the first one. The second one.
So it's not the one we've reviewed for the show already.
I don't think we've reviewed the Beastmaster. We have never reviewed.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Yeah. Anyway, sorry. Totally different genre. Yeah. I don't know how we.
Correct. And also, there is a documentary out called Jodorowsky's Dune.
Documentary. I still haven't watched it, but I'm not going to lie. I might watch that later today.
It's fine. I gave the Buttmeister the pick because I'm like, you're the Dune fanatic, bro. I was like, do you want to do David Lynch's Dune or do you want to do Jodorowsky's Dune? And he picked his way because fear's the mind killer. So he stuck his hand in the box and he pulled out David Lynch's Dune scrawled on a paper. And I was like, all right, cool. That's what we're doing.
Yes, that's exactly what happened, Admiral. 100%. No artistic liberties taken there.
And you're probably wondering, well, wait, why did he take his hand out of the box? It's because the Phantasm is Frida and the Honorable Tesla decided to give him kisses instead of hold the needle by his neck.
Oh, Tesla and Frida.
Yep.
Dang it. They're so cute, y'all. I know we talk about them a lot, but they really are very, very good pups.
Apparently Ridley Scott was also supposed to direct it, but he backed out and David Lynch was like, oh, okay.
And he did Alien instead.
No, Alien was before.
Oh, okay.
Alien was 79.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, guys, look, I mean, we can talk about this a little bit more if you want to, but I feel like I've reached all my notes. I don't know. How about you?
So here on Cinema Gems, we have a pretty simple rating system. Yes, even for a weird movie like this. Whole gem, amazing movie. Half gem, I liked it. No gem, waste of time. Admiral, where would you put this on our scale?
For me personally, for my viewpoint, I would probably give it somewhere between a full gem and a half gem. Like, kind of dead center.
I'm right there with you.
Kind of dead center, but more like toward this vague cloud of spice full gem. Like,
and I will say it does creep more towards whole gem when you split it up like we did.
Yeah.
Don't try to watch it all in one sitting. Break it up into chunks.
Yep.
And I promise it's much more compelling like that. You're going to want to go in for the next quote episode.
Yep.
As opposed to feeling burned out.
And did this movie come out in December of 1984. Its budget was $42 million, and it made $38
million. $42 million for little block shields.
Hey, I like the block shield, okay? I like
it. I audibly laughed the first time they used the big chunky block shields in the movie. It's so goofy.
All right, guys, so we just want to thank Marty and the Eric Nazerber for allowing us to be on your website, lowrampictures.com. Guys, please go check out the Your 30 tab. They are way more popular than we are. Also, go check out the What's On tab.
They're better than we are.
Correct. Also, thank you to Kevin George for letting us use your music. Also, Buttmeister, before we go, I just want people to know that they should relax, take some time, breathe, and just think before they speak. That's all I have to say.
I fully agree with that, Admiral. And of course, thank you again to all of our amazing Swapper Jacks, friends and family members, as well as all of our new and old Cinemaniacs. We love y'all so much. Don't forget us to tell us how we did today. What did y'all think? What would you like to hear us talk about later in the future? You can tell us all of that by emailing cinemagems15, that's a 1 and a 5, at gmail.com. Thank y'all so much. We love y'all. All we want right now is peace and accountability in the Middle East.
We do.
And for y'all to have the time y'all need.
Yep. And also, guys, just remember to take some time before you can help others. But also, guys, remember to wipe your hooves and see you later. But remember, black lives always matter, guys.
Always.
Bye, guys.
Love y'all.
See ya. Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo.